And you tuned in to Morning Edition on KASU Jonesboro. Good morning. I'm Mark Smith. Joining us by phone this morning, Congresswoman Joanne Emerson, who represents Southeast Missouri's 8th Congressional District. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark.
Well, we'll jump right into it here. The so-called super committee in Congress now has less than a week to reach an agreement on a plan for debt reduction. You've signed on to a letter urging the committee to go big or go home.
Well, I have, because I believe, first of all, that to do a really responsible job in getting our fiscal house in order, that we really have to try to do more than the $1.2 trillion worth of cuts over 10 years. That is the minimum requirement for the super committee. And I, like 99 of my other colleagues, and quite frankly, there are a slew of others who didn't sign the letter, believe that everything has to be on the table, because you can't have a negotiation without putting everything on the table. Keep in mind, too, that my party only controls one half of one third of the government. So the Republicans have the House, the Democrats have the Senate, and the Democrats have the White House. And so, unfortunately, I know people don't like to hear that word, but you're forced to make some compromises. And we've made some good progress on cutting the spending. Very good progress. We traditionally do not cut spending and make hard cuts to it, but rather maybe cut the rate of growth. We've actually been successful in making hard cuts. The budget that I control, the financial services and general government budget, I chair that appropriations subcommittee, we've actually put 17% cut on the table, and I feel pretty good about that, and it's not going to decimate anything particularly, although the Internal Revenue Service would like you to think it. But nonetheless, it's we've got to have everything on the table, Mark. And certainly, by simplifying our tax code, by getting rid of so many loopholes that exist that allow companies, for example, like General Electric, to pay almost nothing in federal income taxes, but you've got large multinational corporations, even Walt Disney World, they pay an effective rate of 40%, and so consequently, there is not fairness in the tax system, and we have to close loopholes because we need the revenue, and we need also to have fairness in the tax system for everybody.
Well, you talk about going big. You talk about putting everything on the table. Does putting everything on the table mean tax increases on some?
Well, I do not consider that closing a tax loophole, for example, is a tax increase. I believe that, when you look at the revenues that we have taken in our country over the last year, we are at an historic low with about less than half the American public paying anything into the federal income tax system. And then you've got large corporations who should be paying a fair share of taxes, particularly those who are among the biggest in the world. And then you've got others who are paying what one could consider to be an unfair share given the tax breaks that some get. So if one wants to consider that closing a loophole is a tax increase, so be it. But I don't believe that that's the case. You can lower tax rates, which we believe we should do, and get more income by broadening the tax base.
Well, looking at some of the arguments going back and forth here, what do you say to the viewpoint that going big means cutting programs that are designed to help those that are the most vulnerable in our society, those who are already struggling, who can't find jobs, who are poor and hungry and homeless? What are they supposed to do if this little bit of help they are getting from the federal government goes away?
Well, first of all, keep in mind that within the framework of the super committee, neither veterans benefits, for example, or Social Security are on the table. I think that it's very important with regard to Medicare, for example. Certainly we have a large number of seniors in our district, and we need to preserve the system not only for them but for those in the future. But I do also believe that if your income is a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, you can afford to pay a little bit more for your Medicare premium than somebody who is living on their Social Security benefits, which might, if they're lucky, be $800 or $900 a month, and so there needs to be some fairness in that system as well. Besides which, when you look at the Medicare system, there are numerous ways that you can save billions and billions of dollars every year by bringing some competition to the pharmaceutical prescription drug market. Now, I just read an article this morning that said that the co-pays and premiums for the Medicare prescription drug benefit are going to go up substantially. Well, why, when we don't have new blockbuster drugs that are necessarily included in the formulary for Medicare? And so if a drug has been on the market for a longer time, you would think that the price would go down, not up. It still doesn't. It doesn't cost more to produce that particular drug. And so rather than cater to special interests, you've got to really look at the system and see, okay, where are the savings? And so I don't have a problem specifically asking someone who has a lot of money to pay a little bit more for their premium to get the benefit of that program. So that's not going to hurt the folks who rely on Medicare and Medicaid. I know that there are some ideas out floating out there, and we don't really know specifically what they are with regard to shoring up the Medicaid system. And unfortunately, that system is run by the states, while the feds actually put 60% of the funds in. The 40% that the states put in do allow them to design their programs, and so there is no national Medicaid program, if you will.
Well, there's a question of is the supercommittee going to meet the deadline to come up with something? There was a mechanism put in place called sequestration, which would implement automatic budget cuts if no agreement was reached. Is this a real threat? Because some people are saying now that, maybe we could repeal that trigger mechanism.
Well, you know what? We passed a law, and it said that there would be sequestration. Nobody was terribly hurt when we had sequestration back in the 90s. There was a law in place, Graham-Rubin-Hollings, that did, in fact, require sequestration if budget targets weren't met. And it happened around the time that we were able to balance the budget. So I feel very strongly that, you stick to your word and you don't try to get around things. But the fact is that what the Congress put in place were pretty tough cuts if, in fact, the supercommittee didn't come up with an agreement, and that was $600 billion of cuts in defense over 10 years and another $600 billion on top of the $500 billion that was cut because of the new health care law. So, consequently, it's problematic, but that should be all the more incentive for the supercommittee to get roll up their sleeves and really get this done. And, both parties do posture. I mean, it's become political, which is so typical. But at the end of the day, it's our responsibility as legislators to find solutions to problems that impact this country. And so I fully believe that they're going to have to come up with something, or we will have to face the consequences of sequestration. And that's, going to be the fault of the Congress if that happens. But at the end of the day, we have to abide by the laws that we put in place. And I think that they could actually go bigger so that we could get our arms around entitlement programs and the like for the going far into the future, as opposed to, just tinkering around the edges.
All right, we got to move along quickly here if we don't run out of time. I wanted to talk about, I understand you forayed down into our neck of the woods last week.
I was down in Corning, and I was down in Pocahontas, mm-hmm. with Rick Crawford, our new colleague from Northeast Arkansas, to talk about the great need and the great opportunity to finish the four-laning of Highway 67.
Right.
We've got about 2 miles left in Missouri, but the funds have already been designated for that. And so y'all down in Northeast Arkansas have, from Walnut Ridge up to Poplar Bluff, or actually the Missouri line to get done. And so we had some excellent meetings with our officials throughout the northeast part of Arkansas, as well as our folks, just to build the coalition deeper and to get real excited, hopefully get people excited about this, because if, in fact, we can have a four-lane highway all the way from Little Rock up St. Louis, I think that's going to add a lot of opportunity for economic development, for moving goods in and out of the area, and will create opportunities for country companies to move down and or expand operations. So I think it's a win-win at the end of the day, and I'm real pleased that you all, the state of Arkansas, passed that bond issue mm-hmm. to allow more funds to go into upgrading and upgrading highways. And so we'll keep our fingers crossed. This is it's a coalition effort, and both states stand to gain an awful lot from it. So I'm just going to keep praying that we're going to get it done.
Yeah, the parts of that are finished are very nice, and
it's terrific.
We need to get it all completed and connected.
Oh, absolutely, and it is a real win-win, and I'm just a big believer that good infrastructure attracts companies who need to move their products to market, and we have an opportunity to create a huge regional economic engine if we can just get the infrastructure in place. It's kind of one of those, you know, if you build it, they will come, mm-hmm. field of dreams types of opportunities, and so we're doing everything we can on my side of the border to ensure that happens, and I know that your local officials and Congressman Crawford certainly believe that's important added value for your region as well.
Yeah, this is an infrastructure project that's already well underway that just needs to be completed. There are so many infrastructure projects that have been put off for too long that can't be put off much longer. We got bridges that are going to fall down if we don't get them replaced or repaired.
Well, you know, the sad thing is that when the Congress or when the President pushed forward his stimulus plan a few years ago, he probably would have had the majority of the Republicans voting for it if it had been focused both on the highway bill, and we had just done reauthorized the highway bill together with the Water Resources Development Act, so that we could get our inner, you know, our Mississippi River and our inner riverways transportation system much better facilitated. I mean, I look at the cost of a lock and dam, for example. Boy, you could have built one and gotten it all finished when you had that large a chunk of money. But sadly, it costs five times more than it needs to, just because there's not enough money on a year-to-year basis to finish one whole lock and dam. Mm-hmm. So if we had done that, it would have been very interesting, and I think that we would find that our unemployment situation was certainly much improved as compared to where it is right now.
There's a lot of concern in our rural communities in Northeast Arkansas and Southeast Missouri about the planned closure of several post offices. That's a big concern.
Well, it is a big concern, and you know, the post office is seriously in debt. People need to know, though, that for the most part, this is not taxpayer dollars. The Postal Service runs based on the revenues they get from the cost of a postage stamp, mm-hmm. and some other things. But the federal taxpayers only pay for mail going to our soldiers overseas and for the handicapped. And consequently, but needless to say, the system is part of our Constitution, and it's very important that we make it work more efficiently and certainly in a less costly way. The problem is that most of our rural post offices, if you close those, they're not going to end up saving a whole lot of money, if any, because they, for the most part, return more revenue than they cost, number one. And number two, the real problem is the whole regional distribution system and the management, the heavy-duty, top-heavy management of the Postal Service. And so I'm hopeful there are several pieces of legislation moving through that would try to solve this problem. But in the meantime, you know, the post office is using or trying to get the low-hanging fruit. And so by closing some of the distribution centers, I've got one in Cape Girardeau that they aim to close, as well as numerous rural post offices. This takes the heart and soul out of our rural communities, and doesn't solve their problem whatsoever.
Yeah, we got a distribution center in Jonesboro they're talking about closing too. So
yeah, I mean, yeah. So what happens is, you know, the mail gets collected in Cape Girardeau, they send it to St. Louis for the weekend to hold, and then they bring it back down, which to me is the most inefficient thing I've ever heard of. Yeah. But I'm sure that's exactly what happens there in Arkansas as well.
Yeah, they're going to be shoveling ours through Memphis, so. It's quite an issue and a lot of concern to a lot of folks. I know sports has been big news in your state. Of course, the Cardinals won the World Series, and you got changes in college athletics, too.
Yeah, so I only wish that we were going to be in the Western Division of the SEC so that we could play Arkansas more than maybe once every 3 years, because I would consider Arkansas to be a great rival. We're real excited about the SEC. I know that Kansas is not. They're very upset, and they've been kind of trash talking it. But I think that we really fit well into the culture of the SEC, and it's going to be exciting to play in that league. On the World Series front, thank you so much for your kind words. I am such a diehard Cardinal fan. I even watched the Mike Mussini press conference the other day, which people looked at me like, are you crazy? But I'm excited. I think we have some great opportunities, and I'm just going to pray that we sign Albert. I know they started the talks, so we'll see.
All right. Well, we're about out of time. I appreciate your time today, though.
Hey, thanks so much, and have a very happy Thanksgiving.
And you as well. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Congresswoman Joanne Emerson of Southeast Missouri represents the 8th Congressional District there.